Welcome home. We are WNST, Towson, Baltimore, AM 1570. We're Baltimore Positive at BaltimorePositive.com. Lots of folks finding me for my birthday this week. Big thanks for that. Go out and support our sponsors for my birthday. Go get a crab cake. That friend's reached me. Said, where's the best crab cake? I'm like, all of them. Go to Coco's, go to Costas, go to Fadley's, go to Cooper's Pub, go at the State Fair, where we're going to be doing the show in a couple of weeks as well. The Maryland Crab Cake Tour is back out on the road. It's all brought to you by our friends at the Maryland Lottery. I have the Raven Scratch Offs. Also, our friends at Liberty Pure Solutions, making our water crystal clear, 1-800 Clean Water, and Jiffy Lube Multi Care. I'm wearing my Curio shirt as well as we have our 26 oysters. The tour is all coming to life beginning this weekend. I had a Baltimore Positive. I have a little extra time on my hands this weekend. We didn't do a crab cake tour this week because I thought the Orioles could be hitting walk-off home runs in game three, like the Cleveland Indians were, excuse me, Guardians were. I'll never get that one right. Neither will half the fan base based on what I've seen watching the games. But this Monday Night Football thing. Speaking of Cleveland, let's talk about Baker Mayfield here a little bit. Luke Jones joins us now. He has been. And it's sort of a weird week for the Ravens and for Harbaugh and for how they put things together. As my friend Brian Baldinger would say to me 25 years ago, the fruit fly cycle, every 7 days, then you mix it up, go 8.5. And then the press conferences are on Thursday and the game's on Monday and they sit around the hotel in Tampa. And this whole thing was a little bit in doubt a week ago after the storms down there. Weird week. And more than that, this Baker Mayfield longing for Mark Andrews as well.
Well, weird week, but also another challenge, another offense that's playing at a high level. You just mentioned Baker Mayfield, who has, over the last 2 seasons now, or season and a half, I think we can at least say that much, has experienced a career renaissance. I mean, he leaves Cleveland a few years ago and what was in Carolina, wound up with the Rams, where he played that, was it a Thursday night game or whatever it was, where he had, was there for 3 days and ended
By the
up
way, still
playing.
one of the more amazing things. That and Flacco going to
Sure.
Cleveland. I mean, you and I know football better than most people. And to think that a quarterback can walk in a building and a couple days later win a game anywhere, anytime, it's not like being a starting pitcher.
No. I mean, it was a credit to him and a credit to their coaching staff at the time, but he arrives in
A
Tampa and
little
the.
different. And I mean, for that, yeah, he changed my mind about him that night in some way.
It was a credit to him. It was a credit to that coaching staff and perhaps a sign that, hey, this guy's career isn't just going to be being a backup and a journeyman at that point. And obviously winds up in Tampa Bay in the aftermath of Tom Brady's retirement. And he's turned his career around. I mean, you look at what he's done. I mean, we've talked so much about Lamar Jackson and MVP, and he's been brilliant, and all of that's true. Baker Mayfield has 15 touchdown passes through the first 6 weeks of the season. I mean, you're doing something right when you do that. And clearly, it helps that he has Chris Godwin, who is having a career year, and Mike Evans, who's still chugging along into his 30s, still playing at a very high level. But yeah, this is a Tampa Bay team that's playing pretty good football across the board. I wouldn't say they're necessarily elite at any one phase, offensively or defensively, but if you look at them in terms of like their metrics, DVOA, things like that, they're kind of top 10 or somewhere in that neighborhood in just about everything they do. I know not every raw statistic looks that way, but they're 4-2. They're playing at home. To your point, I would expect for the fans who are in attendance that that's going to be a pretty emotional, pretty electric atmosphere on the heels of everything that community's gone through with the hurricanes and just the cleanup and the devastation there. So for the people who have the opportunity to be in the building that night, I think it's going to be exciting for them. And it's a Tampa Bay team that's 4-2, just like the Ravens. So I think the Ravens, and we've talked about this now for a couple weeks, that they've reestablished themselves as one of the NFL's top teams. I think we all would agree with that. Not that it's perfect. We could talk about the pass defense, what have you. But I think for this Tampa team, this is an opportunity on the national stage to go up against Lamar Jackson and a Ravens team that we know never loses to NFC teams. And we know how that's worked over the last several years. But it's a chance for Tampa Bay to say, hey, don't sleep on us in the NFC. So I think this is a really interesting game in that regard. And based on how these two offenses have operated, I think This is another week where you're expecting plenty of points on the scoreboard on both sides. So I think this is going to be has the potential to be a really good football game on Monday night.
Also, some concerns about Evans, right? And we talked so much earlier this week about the Ravens' good fortune and good health, and it's a great time to talk about that. I'm sure Monday we'll get together again after there's another, 15 car crashes in the league on Sunday, and say some other teams are getting banged up. The Ravens have had great fortune in that way, and to sit here and say, well, the number one thing that's going to kill them is going over the top and Baker Mayfield, and the fact that, the league is on to the Ravens secondary and defense. We talked about DNPs last week and all that. This is another opportunity for the defense to play better, to say, we're not going to go on the road and get shredded for 31, 34, 38 points and potentially lose on the road when Lamar puts 30 up and we give up 31 or like that. It feels like it's going to be a track meet of a kind of game, but they do have a concern with a wide receiver who's special.
Yeah, Mike Evans dealing with a hamstring issue. I know Todd Bowles early in the week said that, he tweaked it. He did say that this is something he's dealt with a little bit. The early indication, and again, we'll know more as we're closer and closer to game time and get the final injury report over the weekend. But I mean, Mike Evans, 50-50 balls, right? I mean, he's kind of epitomizes that big receiver that you don't necessarily see quite as many of those guys anymore. It feels like in recent years, even the most elite receivers tend to not be those 6'4", 6'5" guys anymore. But he certainly is still the exception to that. But dealing with a little bit of a hamstring, we'll see how it looks. I mean, the Bulls had said he was getting better, so we'll see if this is more on the precautionary side or more of a legitimate concern. They're also going to be very likely missing one of their starting corners in Jamel Dean, who hurt his hamstring the previous Sunday, early in that win that they had over New Orleans. So when he was ruled out early in that game, you're ruled out early with a hamstring injury in a game. That's usually not a situation where you're going to turn around the following week and play. So they're going to be down a starting corner. So that's another factor. But I think what's interesting, and you mentioned the pass defense, you mentioned Baker Mayfield and talking about the ball potentially going over their head. Certainly they still have the ability to do that if you have a healthy Mike Evans on the field. But if you look at how Tampa Bay has profiled this year, even compared to last year with Baker Mayfield, it's been much more of the underneath variety, much more getting the ball out quickly. And Tampa Bay leads the league in yak yards. So it's really going to be critical, not just for this secondary and this pass defense to cover, but they need to tackle because really the object for this Tampa Bay offense has been to get the ball in the hands of their playmakers as quickly as possible and to let them pick up yardage via missed tackles, via just getting into open space. So I think that's something that that the Ravens, and we've seen them have their issues on that front. Maybe they've cleaned that part up a little bit, although certainly 2 weeks ago against Cincinnati, missed tackles on the long Ja'Marr Chase touchdown. So not so much on that example, but that's where this might be a game where, okay, maybe they're not going to test you deep, although they could because they've seen the Ravens give up that as well. But you've got to be converging on the football. You've got to be making crisp tackles. You can't let guys get away and get downfield. So I think on that front, it'll be interesting. I'll point out Tampa Bay, was coming off of a big rushing day. But at this point, Nestor, I'll be totally honest with you. And I was even talking about this with a couple other reporters. The Ravens' run defense has been so incredibly stingy, and their pass defense has been so bad at times that even if you are a team that prides itself on running the ball some, I'm not sure how much it behooves you to go into a game against the Ravens and say, oh, we're going to try to establish the run. We're going to try to do this.
Yeah, I don't
And
know
I
who
know
that
you.
team is at this point. Like, I'm looking at the calendar and the schedule and saying, well, it won't be the Bengals and it won't be the Browns and it won't. And I'm looking ahead and I'm like, who's going to really try to run the ball? And that's all the more reason they better figure out how to stop the pass
Yeah,
and
exactly. I mean,
tackle and just tackle in general,
sure,
right?
sure. I mean, you just have to have a cleaner operation. But yeah, through 6 weeks, and I saw a couple people make this comparison, and I saw a couple incorrect ones out there. But through 6 weeks, the 2000 Ravens had given up a total of 304 rushing yards, a little over 50 per game. The 2024 Ravens given up 354 rushing yards. So they're in that territory, they're in that vicinity. Problem is, it's at a point now where the opposition says, all right, fine, we're not going to run against you. That's okay. We're just going to drop back every play and throw. And I think we saw that kind of starting with that Vegas game in the second half. The Raiders have a terrible running game anyway, but they got to the point, even with Gardner Minshew, where they just said, all right, we're just going to chuck it around the field and see if you can stop it. And unfortunately, the Ravens haven't been able to stop it with near the consistency. So I think that's just going to be their reality. And sure, there could be some opportunities for a team to sneak in a run here or there, but for the most part, we've seen teams just kind of look at this and say, all right, we can keep beating our heads against the brick wall and trying to run against a great run defense, or we can open things up and throw it around the field because they can't stop it. So, I mean, that's the reality of where the Ravens are defensively right now. And, you know, as I pointed out, there were a couple positive signs here and there against Washington compared to Cincinnati at the very least, but they still have a long, long way to go until we start looking at that pass defense in a more positive light. And it's going to be another challenge on Monday night for sure.
Yeah, you mentioned that stadium and the community, and you know, my mother-in-law lives down there, lots of friends, lots of family, lots of people I know who have family live in the Tampa area. And you and I've spent some time down there, and I think about Super Bowl 35, which is getting on 25 years ago now, at that stadium. But think about memories in that stadium and going in there. I remember Trent Dilfer went in there Christmas time a year later, and it was a big deal. And Tampa was all lit up because of the Brad Johnson thing, and they were going to win a Super Bowl and like all that. And then I think about going down there. My wife had cancer because we were all wearing pink, and Chris Pica was at that game for whatever reason. He was working or something. And Chris and I sort of tailgated. There was nobody there. And Flacco went out and put 50 on him. Or, you know, it was 35 to nothing, like 2 minutes into the game, as I remember it. I don't have the box score in front of me. You have the memory like Mary Lou Henner about this stuff. But what I remember about that game was at the end of the game. Back when I was a media member, you know, the first 36, 37 years of my career, I remember being down on the field and in the tunnel when Tampa was coming off the field after just getting their ass beat. I mean, you tell me the score. Was it 42-42? Whatever it was awful. And I remember being in the tunnel and watching Mike Evans come out and like, I stood next to a lot of football players, right? Like I've been in every locker room, planes, NBA. I've been, been around awkwardly large people. I was there when John Ogden was drafted up in New York, you know. Evans walked by me and I looked at him. I'm like, my God, he's like a tree. Like I couldn't believe how big he was against Steve Smith at the time with the Ravens and different wide receivers that we had around here. And I'm like, where do we get one of those? You know? And it's amazing all these years later, and he's such a great name because it's a good times character. Mike Evans, great name, right? Like, I don't know if he's going to the Hall of Fame because I don't think, maybe, I don't know. I mean, the Tom Brady years and all of that stuff, but hell of a career and never misses games. I'm looking at his, like, he's missed five games in 11, 12 years of his career. I think he'll be playing on Monday night, but I think he's a guy who bears discussing to some degree in a franchise of Derrick Brooks, in a franchise of John Lynch, and yeah, just the players they've had there. And every time I see Dungy, and every time I see Mike Tomlin, I think of the Tampa 2 defense, and I just think of the defense that really for 20 years them and the Ravens were the two teams playing defense. Now nobody's going to play defense on Monday night.
Yeah, I mean, to go back to what you mentioned in 14. Now, it wasn't 2 minutes into the game, but it was 2 minutes into the second quarter that Joe Flacco had thrown five touchdown passes. And yeah, the final score was 48-17, but it was
Okay.
really the first 16 and a half, 17 minutes of that ball game where the Ravens were up 35-0. So,
Can I give you one more memory about that day? And this
sure.
has everything to do with me being a snarky media prick. They have a great, great ice cream halftime tradition at Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I've only been a media member at like three or four because we never play there. Like literally, right? Like we play there every 8 years. But they have a great ice cream buffet. That's all I'm going to say. And they do banana splits in Tampa up in the press box. So there.
Very good. Good.
All right.
But yeah, I mean, you look at where Tampa Bay has been, and obviously, most recently, it's been the team that Tom Brady chose to finish out his career, won a Super Bowl there, had success there. So that was good for the likes of Mike Evans, who also dealt with a lot of losing early in his career. To your point, going back to that 2014 game, but I think they're at an interesting time where, they've got. I mean, they still have two elite receivers. I mean, Mike Evans has the longevity, but again, don't sleep on Chris Godwin. I think one of the pivotal matchups in this game is Chris Godwin in the slot against what I assume will mostly be Marlon Humphrey. I think that'll probably be the way the Ravens proceed in this one. That's going to be critical. But I mean, Mike Evans is having a good year. It's not like you look at Mike Evans and say, oh, he's washed up or anything like that. He's been rock solid. But Chris Godwin, he's got over 500 receiving yards already. He's got 43 catches. So, we've seen Zay Flowers explode these last couple of weeks. I mean, Chris Godwin has been excellent for them. He's another year removed from that knee injury he had a few years ago. So they have. We've talked about this in how the Ravens have gone up against a challenging schedule of quarterbacks, Gardner Minshew notwithstanding. But you look at the receivers that they've faced. Now, Cincinnati, it slaps you in the face, obviously, how good their top two receivers are. But, last week it was Terry McLaurin, and now it's going to be Mike Evans and Chris Godwin. So, I think this is a big game. This isn't like a game that the Ravens look at it and say, oh, we must have this one. We need to have this one. They want to keep it going with a four-game winning streak. But I think for the Tampa Bay side, this is a game where last year, they were a nice story. They made it into the playoffs in a terrible division. We know all about that. But I think this is a game that the Buccaneers can really kind of stamp their hand, I think, a little bit in terms of, all right, this is a team that needs to be taken seriously in the NFC. So I think what's interesting, and you mentioned the Ravens only play them every 4 years. I still find I forget about this every 4 years, but then you hear about it and it's like, oh wow, you start to think back. Tampa Bay has not beaten the Ravens since that 0-2 game. What was it? Week two. It was a home opener when they shut out the Ravens in Baltimore, right? I mean, that was the year, obviously, the cap purge had taken place. Chris Redmond began the year as the quarterback, and we all thought that the Ravens might go 3-13 that year. That's how bad everyone thought the Ravens were going to be after those first couple weeks. Tampa Bay has not beaten them since then. And I get it. They've only played five times since then, but the Ravens are still 5-0. And then we get into Lamar and knowing that Lamar's only lost one career game in a start against NFC teams. And that's where you look at this and say, okay, what is a little more interesting on that front? We just talked about the offense. Todd Bowles, certainly someone who has a defensive background and saw them 2 years ago, albeit it was the Greg Roman system at that point in time. Does that make any impact here in terms of an NFC defense going up against Lamar? Oh, yeah, you throw Derrick Henry into the mix now. Oh, yeah, Mark Andrews is coming off of his best season or best game of the season. Isaiah Likely kind of sort of had his coming out party against the Buccaneers 2 years ago in that Thursday night game, if you recall, where the Ravens were trailing early in that game. Mark Andrews left the game with an injury, and Isaiah Likely had a big second half, and that was kind of his big welcome to the NFL moment. So will the Bucs have any more luck because they've seen Lamar more recently than the typical NFC team that you're talking every 4 years, and you think about the roster turnover and coaching turnover that typically occurs in 4 years. So I think that's a makes this one a little more interesting on that front. But let's face it, I think both these teams are going to score a lot of points. It's going to be a matter of which defense can get a couple stops here and there. I mean, that might be the difference here. I think this game, I'd be surprised if we're talking about a game that's 20-17 on Tuesday morning. I think you're going to see at least both these teams in the high 20s, if not going into the 30s scoring wise. So, I think any team right now facing the Baltimore Ravens, where do you begin? I mean, you have to be creative. You have to have enough soldiers, quite frankly. You need guys that even with the right game plan defensively, they've got to be able to carry it out. You need to have a playmaker at every level. I think you have to be willing to take chances as a defense and not be afraid of Lamar making you look bad or Derrick Henry making you look bad. I think you do have to take some chances to try to make some plays against this defense, because otherwise they're just going to, you can be afraid of the big play or try to take some chances or play it safe and, be in a position where the Ravens can paper cut you to death. I think they just have so many different ways that they can beat you right now that, again, it kind of goes back to your offense better score and score a lot, because I don't think you're going to get many stops against this Ravens offense that, let's face it, even early in the season when we were talking about the offensive line questions and concerns, they were still scoring points. I mean, it's not as though this team's come out there at any point and been held to, 10 points or 13 points. I mean, at a minimum, they've scored into the 20s. So, it's not an easy task. Can a defense that saw Lamar at the very least and elements of this offense a couple years ago rise to the occasion? As I said, it's a solid defense. It's not an elite defense in any way. So it's going to be fascinating. But again, I come back to, I'm not sure how many stops either team is going to make over the course of 60 minutes. So you better be ready to score points and score a bunch of points over the course of Monday night's game.
He is Luke Jones. He is Baltimore Luke. We're getting ready for some football around here and certainly some World Series baseball at some point in the coming weeks as well. All of our work up at Baltimore Positive. We're doing the Maryland Crab Cakes. We're going to be at Mama's on the Half Shell coming up this Friday, the 25th. We'll be there in the afternoon. Got some great guests coming out. I'm not plugging everything, but I'm actually going to be in Owings Mills on a Friday for the first time in like 3 years. So I'm looking forward to that. Get some oysters out there as well and going to hang out with the McCusker family and my late great friend. And Scunny, his son Finn will be there, so it'll be a good time. All are brought to you by the Maryland Lottery. Have Ravens scratch-offs to give away, as well as our friends at Jiffy Lube MultiCare putting us out on the road. All right, last thing on Tampa, and because you and I are going to do all like residue thing on this come Monday, where are you on Baker Mayfield's renaissance? Are you stunned, shocked? I mean, I mentioned that Thursday night game when he went out there and Rams gear and ran around, and I'm like, the Rams are desperate. That's how I felt. And then they won, and I'm thinking, nobody's prepared to play on a Thursday night, but he was. And now he's sort of filled in for Tom Brady, winning football games. The thing hasn't bottomed out in Tampa the way it has in New England. It has in New England twice now, right? So, and I don't know where the bottom of that will be when it's all over with for the Patriots, but. And there, we'll watch them play on Sunday night as well. I would just say, for me with Baker Mayfield, I'm shocked all the way around. I was shocked that he was ever a 1-1. I remember distinctly having a conversation on that day we froze our ass off in Green Bay, you and I, in the Lambeau Field press box. He was crotch chopping, doing something really dumb, wagging his finger at fans. Dumb like the Eagles head coach wagging his finger at the Eagles fans at home last week, and then put his kid on his lap in the press conference. I would just say for Baker Mayfield, I'm shocked that he's had this level of success, especially after the commercials in the beginning and the bottoming out of Cleveland. I tip my cap to him. He is he's a little bit of a rocky figure for me when it comes to quarterbacks and 1-1 and enough legs to be interesting, enough arm to be interesting, but I don't look at him and ever compare him to, I dare I say, any of the real 1-1s when I'm talking Peyton Manning. And I would even put Andrew Luck and a couple of other guys in that category. Even Trevor Lawrence, I thought, was a much better prospect. Time will tell in Jacksonville, and a lot of this, as Sam Darnold will prove, it's about environment. It's as Baker Mayfield, as Geno Smith, all these resurrection guys that come back, and then guys like Justin Herbert and these guys that we anoint and give them the TV commercials, and we wait for them. Baker Mayfield's making a case for himself, and I'm interested to see him play against this team and at home and see what they have under the hood on Monday night. Because I've been a Baker Mayfield doubter. And the way you think I'm a Lamar doubter, I'm not. And I'm a Joe Burrow fan, I guess I am. And thinking like I'm going to bet a dollar on that guy to win a Super Bowl at some point because of the kind of leader he is, the organization he's in. With Burrow, I still concern myself with the fact that those are the Bengals. And I think to some degree, I always thought that way about Tampa. I don't know, man. Those kids down there, the Glazer guys. I mean, they brought Tom Brady in, won a couple more. I mean, I'm shocked that Baker Mayfield's had this success.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I'd say shocked. I think if you go back and look, I mean, go look at Baker, two of his first three seasons in Cleveland. In Cleveland of all places. He had a really good rookie year. I mean, I vividly think back to that Week 17 game in Baltimore where remember the Ravens clinched the division. CJ Mosley had the late play, and obviously the Ravens ran for a ton of yards in the infancy of the Lamar era offense, you know, with the transition from Joe Flacco to Lamar. But Baker's first year, 27 touchdowns, 14 interceptions. As a rookie, I mean, you'll take that any day of the week, the way he played. Year two wasn't as good, but then year three, 26 touchdowns, eight interceptions. I mean, again, you were just talking about Tampa Bay and that environment. We know what Cleveland's been, with the exception of a couple years, right? Here and there.
Dude, he arrived on the back end of Johnny Football.
Sure, yeah. And Johnny Football was before or was after however many failed picks. I mean, you mentioned one ones. I mean, Tim Couch was a failed one, colossal failure. We've seen way worse. Way worse. Even Baker before the last year or two, we've seen way worse one ones at quarterback before. But you know, you do look at the trajectory and the fact that they jettison him, they bring in Deshaun Watson. You see how that's been such a disaster for them. And Amari Cooper was able to escape and goes to Buffalo. I think a good landing spot for him. But with Baker, the question was, he winds up in Carolina. We know what the Panthers have been in recent years, and under new owners, you know, their current ownership, and are they ever going to figure things out? You mentioned, though, goes to the Rams, has that really weird, really impressive performance, and clearly Tampa Bay liked it because they gave him a shot to be in the mix. You know, they didn't just hand him the starting job after Tom Brady retired, but they said, hey, come here, compete, see what you can do. You know, they're thinking at the very least he could be a really good backup. I think that's where people kind of were a couple years ago thinking, okay, Baker Mayfield, maybe he's not going to be that franchise quarterback, but he can at least be a heck of a backup. And he's proven that he can still be more than that. Now, if you want to sit here and ask me if I think Baker Mayfield's going to lead them to a Super Bowl this year or at any point in the next few years, I'm still very skeptical of that, but he certainly, you have to give him credit that he's a legitimate starting quarterback in the NFL right now, you know, and is putting up some really impressive numbers. So hats off to him. And, you know, he's overcome adversity, got the heck out of Cleveland. I mean, how many different people do you say that about over the course of the, at least 25 years, if not longer? So, you know, it's certainly been a good story. Again, he's very much put himself back into that firm footing of saying, okay, whether he's going to be a long-term franchise guy that's going to give you a great chance to win a Super Bowl or not, that's certainly up for debate at best. But he's one of the top 32 very comfortably, very easily. He's in that realm of rock solid starting quarterback, and he's playing better than that right now. As I said, I mean, the numbers he's put up the last couple weeks, you know, you have to give him credit. And for Tampa Bay, for the investment, the modest investment made in him, it's been a nice transition going from Tom Brady to him, at least in terms of wanting to be competitive. Again, I think Monday night's a great opportunity for the Bucks, and I, you know, I'm not specific to the Ravens, just going up against any team of the Ravens' ilk on the national stage. And you know, if they can come away with a victory, I think it'll say way more about them than it'll say anything about the Ravens, other than presumably if the Ravens lose Monday night, we're going to be continuing to talk about their pass defense because that's the biggest eyesore right now. You know, sticking out like a sore thumb on an otherwise excellent football team. So we'll see how it plays out. But yeah, the Baker Mayfield thing has been it's been a good story the last couple of years. And I the joking this week with Mark, you know, him with Mark Andrews, and obviously those two have a relationship going back to their college days playing together. But you know, he's always had a personality that, good or bad, has been a lightning rod. You know, going back to what you were just talking about him in college, that's why some of these commercials and some of these brands have wanted him to film commercials because they've liked his personality. They've liked something about his, who he is as a person, to at least garner some attention. So I think the good thing for him is finally it feels like, he's cooled down, he's calmed down on that front. I mean, the Andrews joking is all in good fun, obviously, if you saw the clips, but he's really been able to raise his game back to a level of, where it was those first couple years in Cleveland, where, at that point in time, the Browns were, Browns fans thought they had found their guy. He had taken them to the playoffs. He was having, I don't want to say MVP kind of numbers, but was certainly above average a couple of those
Dude, they would
seasons.
have been
So,
way better to have paid him.
of course. Oh, I mean, at this point, man, a potted plant might be better than Deshaun Watson at this point. That's how bad he is. I mean, believe me, Amari Cooper celebrating as hard as anyone, being able to get out of there and then landing in Buffalo with Josh Allen. So, yeah, in hindsight, I mean, the Browns fans, I'm sure on a daily basis, talk radio in Cleveland, I'm sure they're taking calls about Baker Mayfield and what he's doing right now, in contrast to what Deshaun Watson is not doing right
They
now.
could have had Baker Mayfield as a starter and Joe Flacco as a backup and done that the last 3, 4 years. They might have won 11 or 12 games, especially with the kind of defense they've had.
But that's also where you go back to your point about Baker. I mean, let's face it, things had gotten to a point where it had gone downhill, right? I mean, I mentioned that as good as he was two of those first 3 years, and then the following year it was not good, and he was banged up, and they weren't playing well, and you get to a point where
Well, he was humbled. There's no doubt about that. They threw him out. Yeah.
I mean, any team that's in that realm where you look at other elements of your roster and you say, well, we got to figure out the quarterback. Well, Cleveland, I'm not saying they did it well. Obviously they didn't, but they clearly identified that as a priority and they sold their soul. They gave up draft picks. They handed him a fully guaranteed contract, and they did it to Deshaun Watson. I mean, the idea of going out and getting a franchise quarterback for them wasn't necessarily wrong at that point. I don't think you would have found anyone that was a big believer in Baker Mayfield at that point in time. I think at best, even if you still thought Baker could be a good quarterback, I think at best there was a thought that it was time for a change of scenery for him, at the very least, and Cleveland needed a franchise guy. So they did what they did. Awful decision, awful individual more than anything to pick rather than identifying the need for a franchise quarterback. It's just they picked the wrong guy, clearly. That's the understatement of the day. So, in the meantime, Baker took him a year. Keep in mind, he got benched in Carolina. I mean, it's not like things went well for there either. I mean, knowing the Panthers have just been horrendous the last few years.
Kind of reminds me of all my
So,
middle school teachers. He was not reaching his potential.
I mean, say what you want. I mean, again, not so good environments, but I think he'd be the first to tell you. And I think he's probably talked about this. I'm not a Baker Mayfield historian here by any means, but I think he's probably acknowledged that, hey, I needed to recalibrate and reassess where I was in my career and embrace the opportunity to go to Tampa. He did it in LA where, again, it wasn't like he put up big numbers for them overall, but he had that one game where you just say, that takes some aptitude to be able to do something like that. In the same way we talked about Flacco coming in off the couch in Cleveland last year, and then he parlayed that into an opportunity in Tampa, on the heels of Tom Brady retiring, and he's taken the ball and he's run with it, and he now has the Bucs playing, playoff caliber football at the very least. Again, I think this is a big opportunity on their side for a statement win for the Ravens. It's the next challenge in terms of, hey, you faced a pretty good run of quarterbacks and opposing offenses. Monday night's going to be no different because Baker's playing at a high level and he has two elite receivers that you better be ready to cover because those two guys are able to make plays, assuming Mike Evans is on the field. And as we mentioned, the hamstring, we'll monitor that as we get closer to kickoff.
I'm going to pretend we're a gambling network now. I mean, it's all the rest of them are. 3.5 point underdog at home, right? Over under's 49.5. I would just say this as a gambling guy, I could not pull the trigger to bet against Lamar against the NFC thing. I think that's one of the weirder things, over even weirder than John Harbaugh's incredible Augusts. I would say the amazing thing about Lamar against the NFC. And the fact that NFC teams don't see it, can't stop it, wherever it is, whatever you think Kyler Murray's doing, whatever you think Jalen Hurts is doing, whatever you think any of the running quarterbacks in the league, and now we're on to maybe a quarter of the league's quarterbacks are more like Lamar and less like Peyton Manning or Tom Brady or Joe Burrow, right? And Joe Burrow's not that way. He ran for a 50-yard touchdown. I shouldn't even throw him into that. Josh Allen runs. I mean, most of the guys run a little bit. The Lamar thing's amazing to me because, and maybe it's because I'm out on Twitter and see other places where quarterbacks are an issue, and maybe Joe Flacco shows up in that Colts gear with his beard looking all sexy and looking 31 again in Indianapolis. But I think about anybody could have had Lamar a year and a half ago. When I had Mike Silver on 2 weeks ago, I'm like, Tampa was one of those places. He would have loved to have gone and played in Florida. He would have loved to have gone to Miami. Jacksonville had their things sorted out, and I don't think that was a good spot. Indianapolis was a place for him. We're seeing New Orleans now struggle. Carolina's a mess. I don't think that would have been good. Atlanta, interesting place for Lamar. I mean, are they really going to win a Super Bowl with Kirk Cousins? Stop. So I'll tell you right now, no. They're not going to win a Super Bowl in Atlanta with Kirk Cousins. So I look at it and see this Tampa thing and say they signed up for Baker Mayfield. It worked out okay, better than a lot of places that looked at Lamar and said, nah, we'll take Anthony Richardson. He's too rich for our blood. We don't want to do that. Or fight with the Ravens or get into a bidding war, whatever that restricted thing would have been a year and a half ago. But Tampa's a place that could have had Lamar.
Could they have though? I mean, did they
They had
really have?
cap issues. They had money
Oh, it's
issues
not
too.
just that. Where were they picking in the draft? You know what I mean? Like they
Right.
didn't have a, because keep in mind this was going to require a trade with the Ravens, and you know you kind of look at that element of it too. Where, look, I mean we can rehash all that if you really want to. I
No, I
really haven't.
don't. I'm just saying
No,
it's
no.
uncanny that Lamar
Oh, I
beats these
know.
NFC teams and nobody wanted Lamar.
Oh, but it also just speaks to, it's really a credit to him that he just continues to get better and better. I mean, I don't know how much of the, you know, the residue of the Washington game, but there were a couple different, even this is former players talking, and talking about how much of a command of the offense he has right now. You know, not just talking about what he's doing after the ball is snapped, but what he's doing at the line of scrimmage, what he's doing pre-snap, getting them in and out of certain protections, in and out of certain plays. I mean, year two on, in the Todd Monken system. I mean, you think back to everything that we would talk about over the years in terms of what could be done to potentially never really stop Lamar, but slow him down, right? A couple of years back, it was a cover zero blitzing. Well, look at what he's done against the blitz this year. I mean, he's largely shredded it, you know, and you just,
Well, you have to recognize it to shred it, right? So, you
sure.
know, part of this was really the education of him under
Sure.
center, I think. And if I were writing the book on it, saying everything he brought with him every year that he liked, that he excelled at, where they said in the beginning, well, maybe you're not the greatest at reading defenses. Maybe that's not what you did in Louisville. Maybe, but here we're going to go to Algebra 1 and then Algebra 2 and then Calculus and all the things that I flunked out of. That we're now at the point where reading D he could never be great unless he could get to the line of scrimmage and get them out of plays, right? Like it was never going to be great until he could pick his play and pick his poison and know exactly where the seam would be and whether he should get rid of the ball or take the ball and reading hips of linemen, right? And watching guys crash down in the running game, but in the passing game, it really has become, and I questioned this a year and a half ago. Yeah, they're going to have him read defenses. They haven't given him that early on, but he's taken it on. And I think that's the thing they knew about him in the beginning. They thought if he can survive long enough, he can be a three-time MVP quarterback.
Well, I think there were always elements to him as a passer that people underrated. I mean, that's obvious from the moment, you know, during the combine when certain teams were talking about him moving the receiver. I mean, that was always idiotic, quite frankly, because if you watched a guy at Louisville, he was in a pro style offense with Bobby Petrino and Louisville.
And he
Go back
threw
and
the
look.
ball a ton.
I was just, and that's the thing. Like, look, I get it. I'm not saying he was the. Not saying he was the refined passer at age 21 that he is now, that the improvement that he's made a lot of improvement, don't get me wrong, but the floor was always way higher there than a lot of people wanted to give him credit for. Now, the Ravens, had a Greg Roman offense that, let's face it, wasn't asking him to do a ton as a passer. But what they had him do as a passer, he did quite well. In his first full year, he led the league in touchdown passes. You got to be doing something right to be able to do that, right? You can't just do that with little ability. So it's just been a matter of they got to a point where I think, and we talked about this a few years ago, they outgrew the Greg Roman system. Greg Roman's never been known as someone who has a high level, complex, sophisticated passing game that you would compare to something that Tom Brady or Peyton Manning or someone of that ilk is running. So they went to version 2.0, which is bringing in Todd Monken. They still run the ball a ton. I mean, heck, they just brought in Derrick Henry, and Derrick Henry's leading the league in rushing, right? So it's not as though they've abandoned that element. Lamar's running the ball as much as he has in 3 years. So it's not like they've abandoned that either. But you have, I'd say their wide receivers are not elite in terms of group, but Zay Flowers is the best wide receiver that Lamar's played with in terms of in his prime. Not talking about name guys like DeSean Jackson or Dez Bryant when they were already into retirement when the Ravens brought them back. But in terms of what Zay Flowers is, and we've seen Rashad Bateman play well and do things that maybe didn't live up to first round hype, but he's looking like a pretty rock solid number two wide receiver right now. They obviously have the two tight ends in Andrews and Likely. So it's all of this coming together. And then you have a 27-year-old quarterback who's now in year six as a starter. And you trust him more. And you have a system that has expanded and grown to say, we're going to do more at the line of scrimmage. We're going to hand you the keys to get us in and out of plays. And if you recognize a certain look that you don't like, here's the answer for it. And we're gonna trust you to make that call. And Lamar he has a really good command of this thing right now. So everything that always applied in terms of his speed and his ability to take off and just the dual threat, the RPOs, they're running so much play action as they should. It would be insane for the Ravens not to use play action when you have Lamar Jackson and Derrick Henry. All those elements that were the explain the bulk of that 22-1 record against the NFC still apply. And oh yeah, you have your quarterback playing at a higher level than ever in terms of just how he's operating, in terms of how he's getting in and out of this thing. I mean, we've talked about it, Nestor. Lamar's been sacked 7 times in 6 games. Credit the offensive line, don't get me wrong, but a lot of that is him understanding pressures and how to get them in and out of certain protections. And also, when the pressure's coming, him getting rid of the ball or taking off and not allowing that pressure to wreak havoc on the play and to knock them back 10 yards and suddenly they're in second and 21 or something like that. I mean, it's just a really clean operation right now. And it's different. It's different. I mean, I years ago, I used the analogy with facing Lamar Jackson. It's like, and this doesn't even apply anymore because the AL and NL, I mean, interleague play is so baked into what you see that you see everyone regularly. But you think back in the day of interleague play or even before that, where Lamar's that pitcher who can throw 100 and also has a devastating breaking ball. And if you don't see that guy, I mean, the batters who see that kind of pitcher struggle. I mean, the AFC, Lamar's record against the AFC is great as well, right? I mean, like, he's won a lot of football games. But then when you get into individuals who don't see that on any kind of a regular basis, good luck. I mean, to your point, yes, there are more dual threats, and there are certainly other, we saw Jaden Daniels. I mean, Josh Allen. Josh Allen's another one of those one of one. He's another special quarterback like Lamar, where you just say, wow, that guy just does things that no one else can do. But in the case of Lamar, I mean, he's still so different than even the best dual threat quarterbacks that, it's, I would say it's like preparing for Navy in college football, although Navy certainly, they've modernized, they've modernized their offense and they're in the top 25 as a result right now. So hats off to the mids, but it really is that element where you might think you have a defense that can handle this or that, with the opposition, but there's just so much to deal with. And that's why I keep coming back to, all right, you might figure out a way to stop this team a couple times here and there, but you better score a heck of a lot because I think at this point in time, I'm not sure what defense is out there that's holding this team to under 20 points without the Ravens doing a lot of self-destruction, right? Turning the ball over, penalties, things of that nature. Because I just think it's an offense that's really firing on just about all cylinders. I mean, there's very little about this offense right now. Maybe penalties, but even that, they weren't penalized much against Washington last week, so they cleaned that up. But I mean, they're playing at a high level, and the offensive line's playing way better. I'm not ready to say that that's a top five or top 10 group yet, but they're trending towards above average. I mean, that's where we're talking right now. And we said all along, if that group could just be above average, then this offense going to be it's going to be hell for the opposition to try to slow down. And we're really seeing that on a weekly basis now.
Luke Jones is here. He's Baltimore Luke. As many of you listeners know, we have no shtick here. He's Luke, I'm Nestor, and I do my thing, and he does his thing, and he tries to not be completely annoyed by me most of the time. But we are coming up on the 1 year anniversary of a momentous occasion that I'm looking forward to pointing out here on the internet. I will be pointing it out on social media and other places. And I want to point it out right now because we've just done 45 minutes of conversation about Tampa versus Baltimore, and we haven't discussed the most important thing, which is Derrick Henry. We've only said his name one time, I think, in 45 minutes. You go through the transcript here. We just pointed out that he's going to get 100 yards and they're going to rush for three. I think we did that 48 minutes ago. November 2nd, 2023, I made a major case earlier this week that adding Derrick Henry would have made the Baltimore Ravens unstoppable. We'll never know, but that would have been fun. How do you feel about that quote a year later, Luke? Do you mind that I bring that up on the 1 year anniversary 2 weeks from now, and then bring that up every week that he's healthy and they might win a Super Bowl because of him?
It's fine.
Okay,
What am
good.
I? What do you want me to say? Like, no, I disagree. I mean,
I just want when they win the Super Bowl, I want to at least be able to say, I told you so.
okay. I can we at least say this? Can we stop? And I don't mean you because I haven't heard you say this. Can we stop with suggestions that Derrick Henry's an MVP candidate? Stop. It's Lamar. It's not even close. Go look at, and I'll tell you why.
Well,
Look.
because you saw the first 10 years of Derrick Henry's career in Tennessee without
Right. And
Lamar.
he was amazing and they didn't win anything. And it just speaks to the value of a running back compared to a franchise quarterback. But I want to throw one stat out for you. And this speaks to Derrick Henry being the first to tell you that he's benefiting more from playing with Lamar Jackson than Lamar Jackson is benefiting playing from Derrick Henry. Doesn't mean that they're not both benefiting. Let me be clear. I'm just saying Derrick Henry is benefiting more. And I'll tell you why. Go look at his numbers. You can see this on Pro Football Reference or any, next gen stats, all of that. He is at a career high, an overwhelming career high in yards before contact, before rushing attempt, even higher than where he was when he ran for 2,000 yards in Tennessee. Now, his yards after contact are also very good, but they're not. That's still more so in line with what he's done over the course of his career. With Lamar Jackson at quarterback, teams are they're kind of paralyzed at the snap because they don't know exactly what to do. And Derrick Henry is absolutely roasting teams as a result.
Well, their
He's
hips
been
are going the wrong way. It buys him another second and a
right.
half, and
I
he's
mean,
gone.
and let me be clear. I'm not saying this to be dismissive of what he's doing. He's been phenomenal. But my point is, stop with Derrick Henry being MVP. No, Lamar. It's Lamar, and it's not even close. It's not even a debate. I'm not
Well, it
going to
just tells me
hear.
you don't know football when you say that. That's all. I mean,
I
and
mean,
there's a whole litany of those people out on X.
oh,
They all have a bar stool.
and let me be clear. Look, that doesn't mean Derrick Henry may not be, talking about him winning Offensive Player of the Year because we know that that's typically gone to whoever has the best offensive stats that doesn't win MVP, even though you could make an argument that the MVP could be Offensive Player of the Year as well. But no, I just want to stress where Derrick Henry is in terms of his yards before contact, yards before he's been touched. We've talked about it on some of these sweep plays where, or some of these, well-designed runs where, they've pulled linemen, all that, where he's not even being touched until, in some cases, not touched at all. And it just speaks to Lamar. It speaks to this operation, speaks to the collective effort. And yes, Derrick Henry's been incredible. So look, The goal will continue to be what we've said about this offense for years now. Again, this is not the first time this offense has been in this kind of territory. They've led the league in scoring. They've led the in rushing. We've seen them do this in the past. It's all about, hey, it's mid-October now. That's great. Looks like this could be the best team in football, or they're certainly in that conversation right now, after an 0-2 start. It's all about keeping this thing going, keeping everyone healthy, keeping everyone fresh, until January. I mean, that's we have to keep bringing that up because, again, that's where this team's been, and it's a credit to them. My goodness, it's a credit to them. But Derrick Henry, for me, it was not about bringing him in to lead the league in rushing. It's about him helping them win games in January. And that's every move they make at this point is judged on that. Anything they might do at the trade deadline, as we're talking about, do they try to add a safety? Do they try to add an edge rusher? Do they try to add a wide receiver? As plenty of people have opined and speculated about. But anything they do, it's judged on January at this point. And yeah, that's why another thing about Lamar, just to go back to him and Derrick Henry's the same way. It's a credit to him as well. You don't sense any sense of satisfaction. I mean, we've seen Lamar flat out be ticked off at the end of some of these games. Cincinnati, it was because of his fumble, just a freak play, obviously, that he just dropped the ball. He was furious. You could tell he couldn't even enjoy the victory because he was that ticked off at himself. In Dallas, he was ticked off about the fact that they had almost blown that lead in the fourth quarter. Last week, he was very willing to talk about Jaden Daniels and how impressed he was with him, but it wasn't Lamar so much talking, being overly satisfied with how they're playing. Every time you ask him, he says, "Hey, we can do this better. We can do that better. We got to clean this up." I mean, you really get the sense for him at this point. And he's always wanted to win. It's never been anything other than that, right? But you're seeing just the natural maturation of a franchise quarterback who is still looking to get to the top of the mountain, just like Josh Allen, just like Joe Burrow, just like anyone else not named Patrick Mahomes in the modern NFL, where you just get the sense that he's certainly not complacent. He's certainly not overly satisfied with where they are right now as a football team. And that's what you want out of your franchise quarterback who's chasing a Super Bowl and has that's the only thing he has left to accomplish is that, right? He's done everything else you can ask for in the regular season. And the numbers, I mean, passing and rushing at this point, his numbers are elite across the board. Even the volume is way higher than it's been in the past. So it's all about January. It's all about January and specifically early February. So keep this ro thing rolling. The next task at hand is Tampa Bay on Monday night and get to 5-2. And then, just keep that thing rolling. I mean, that's really what they've been able to do in past regular seasons, but they want to keep themselves in a position to be ready to roll come January. So health is a big part of that. And, they're healthy and they want to try to keep that going as much as they can, but also acknowledging it's a long 11 games to go in the regular season. And inevitably they're going to start dealing with some health challenges at some point in time. They've been quite fortunate to this point because you and I barely even talked about the Ravens injury report on a weekly basis. I mean, they've been quite fortunate. They've very rarely had any starters missing any meaningful time at this point. And we know that it's a game of attrition. So at some point, they're going to deal with a little more of that. But in the meantime, they're rolling. And Tampa Bay is the next team that has to be playing at a really high level to have a chance to pull off the upset Monday night.
He is Baltimore Luke. He is Luke Jones. You can find him out in front of Baltimore Positive. You can find him back and forth to Owings Mills. We got a football game on Monday night. We're excited about that. We got World Series ahead and plenty of residue on the back end beginning on Tuesday morning. You can find it all out anywhere Baltimore Positive is served. On Friday, we're going to be serving up the crab cakes and the oysters as well as probably some other delicious seafood delights, probably some chowder before it's all over next Friday. We'll be at Mama's on the Half Shell in Owings Mills from about 1 to 4 on Friday. We'll be giving away Ravens scratch-offs from the Maryland Lottery. Also, our friends at Jiffy Lube MultiCare putting us out on the road. 26 oysters, 26 days. The new Oyster Tour module is out at Baltimore Positive. To get educated, Also, to enjoy some oysters all around town. It is a month with an R. It's a birthday month. Last week it was pizza and crab cakes. This week it's going to be oysters. It's all brought to you by our friends at Curio Wellness and Far and Daughter, as well as Liberty Pure Solutions. 1-800 clean water is the way to make that happen. I have my clean water right here, right now. If you have a well water system, you definitely need my friend Doug and those folks at Liberty Pure Solutions. Also, plumbing. They do a great job with the plumbing work. He's Luke. I'm Nestor. It's another football week around here in October. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We never stop talking Baltimore positive.